When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Boston Garden. And now, let's meet the starters for the Boston Celtics.
Celtic Stuff Live. With your hosts, Justin Poulin and John Duke.
Welcome to Celtic Stuff Live on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio and video coverage for your Boston Celtics. Undefeated in the postseason so far, 2-0, but down a man, John, and so disappointing. We'll get into Hayward. We'll get into the Philadelphia 76ers, who I did not think were going to roll over at the very beginning of Game 2, and frustratingly so, because I thought, geez, C's. And then, oh, yeah, lots to talk about. And what about Golden State? Like, I know they've had, you know, a little bump in the road and they lost KD. But, geez, the number two pick, draft lottery, just went off. John and I hopped on and we're going to have this awesome pod for you right away. So good to be talking to you again. Good to be seeing some basketball, especially when the Celtics look like they improved without actually playing a game for 6 months.
Amazing. Holy freaking crap, man. I mean, you know, there is a part of this, like, how much is this the opposition versus how much is it, how much of it is what the Celtics are doing and how good they look. But, oh, my God. I mean, there was, you know, yes, they were, you know, in both games, Philly has come out strong. They've looked good. But I would say without question, I feel like this is about what the Celtics are doing. I feel like the Celtics, you know, whether it's, you know, Jason Tatum's unbelievable shooting, Jaylen Brown really making some tough plays and really getting the momentum going in their, you know, direction. Kemba Walker finding spots and finding the opportunities to hit those easy, so easy mid-range jumpers. You know, and then the bench looking amazing in game two.
Man.
It's clicking on all cylinders, and to have it happen against Philly, oh, how sweet that is.
Yeah, I mean, they're down, and so it seemed almost too easy to break them, honestly. I mean, Embiid definitely trying to do everything he can. You got to give Brad some serious kudos for doing a great job of game planning, and we're definitely going to be talking about the bench, because huge sparks from Robert Williams and even Enes Kanter. And then players like Romeo Langford and Grant Williams definitely coming up big, sparking it, like you mentioned, in game two. And then Jaylen Brown and Kemba Walker. And I just want to talk about that game two, because while I realized the spark was the play of the bench that really pulled their heads out of their butts, really. But I love the fact that Kemba stopped trying to force up all those threes and found that soft spot in the defense before getting too close to the rim, utilizing that pick and pop and the screens, but not as high. It's almost like Philly's perimeter defense is solid and their interior defense is solid, and it's the reason they had the Celtics number. Who knows what it would be like right now with Ben Simmons? It would be different. That defense for Philly would be tighter, but I just love the way that Kemba found that soft spot. But Jaylen Brown made sure that game didn't get away from them. And what I mean is attack. And even how about that one play when he missed two shots in a row, but he got like three offensive rebounds or whatever it was. And then pulled it out on the third attempt. All right, I'm not going to get this one in the rim. I'm coming out. And, you know, that was
on
what we've needed from him forever.
Wasn't that on Horford, too? Wasn't Horford guarding him?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, he's we've gotten the best of Horford several times. And I was thinking to myself while watching that, you know, because remembering, I think it was in game one, he gets the dunk and he's all, you know, and I'm like, oh, you showboat, you're dead. You're so dead. That's not Al Horford. You just turned into Philly culture and you're going to get spun out and spat out. And so now that just bugged me. But then when I was like, I wonder where John's going to go with that. I wonder if he's going to be, yay, we put it in Horford's face, or if it's still going to be, you know, Horford was a great guy when he was here, because he was. And we gave him plenty of room for no criticism for having left. I still feel so good.
We're not bitter, though. We are not bitter. I just want to be clear about that. We are not bitter about that.
With us or against us, it's not about being bitter. It's about, hey, how about you keep your mouth shut? Uh-huh.
Well, remember, he also, on the first night of the season, when they played in Philly, he rang the bell. He rang the bell, you know, which is kind of like the big Philly thing, you know. And so, look,
it just comes full circle, you know. He rings the bell, and then he gets his bell rung. I love it.
Yeah. You know, look, he's counted. He'll be laughing all the way to the bank. But you wonder, if we went to him now, you know, a year ago, it was take the money and run, sure. But if you came to him and had a chance to have a do-over, can't tell. I mean, you got to think he would maybe think twice about that, because he's going to spend the next 3 years either playing in misery as a bench player for the Sixers, or get traded away as a salary dump, or there's some sort of, you know, amnesty thing. The trajectory of the rest of his career by that decision is going to be troublesome, you know, kind of in the same way Carmelo Anthony's has, you know, he's always taken the money, and, you know, it hasn't really worked out for him, you know, over the course of his career. He's rich as hell, but it really hasn't worked out for his status as a player. And I wonder if
so, you know, good Al for Horford, us though. So
well,
good for
it's
us.
It's good for us. And but to
because there wouldn't have been cap space, right? Wouldn't that have? Or well, we did the trade, well, but didn't we still need some of that?
There was a way they could have done it. It was tough. There's a way they could have done it. You know, they would have had to have Brooklyn buy in on the sign and trade, and
right.
But it seemed like that would have worked. It seemed like there was a way to make it happen, but it was pretty slim. But but either way, you know, look, I think sometimes the best deals are the ones you don't make, and maybe it's good that they didn't have him and paying him, you know, even if it was the $22 million, you know, would you want to pay him? I think he'd be much more worth $22 million in Boston than worth $30 million in Philly. I think they would have found a way to play him and he would have worked well. But would Rob Williams have gotten an opportunity here? Would Tice stand up in the way he has? You know, there's so many questions that would have come with that. So I'm happy. I like where we are moving forward. You know, I don't think it could have scripted it better, frankly, given where we are. And to go back to your earlier point, Jaylen Brown. Like, I mean, I want to throw a whole bunch of bouquets towards Jason Tatum. But in both games, I felt like the guy who's kind of really turned it, Tatum broke it open, I felt like. But
no, without Tatum, they're nothing.
No,
it's almost like he's so good, he's not even the guy to talk about right now. Until they're playing Milwaukee, until they have a shot at the NBA Finals even, you know, until the game is on the line and he scores the last 8 points. And this will all happen. And it may not all happen this year, but those things will happen. But it's almost like he's so good, you have to find the other players on the team that made a difference, because he is just creating so much space to get his shot off.
I definitely want to talk about Tatum in a sec, but I want to echo and amplify your earlier point about Jaylen Brown, because Jaylen, there's something about Jaylen. We talked about it a couple of times in the bubble here, but he's the guy, it feels to me, that turns it around. He's the guy. There's something about him, either in terms of a leader or it's leadership, or it's single-mindedness, it's a directive, it's a focus. I'm not exactly sure what it is.
It is all of that, because look at his eyes. Yeah, he's on a mission.
He's on a mission. He's focused, and he wants to, he knows what needs to be. It feels like he knows what he needs to be done, and he now has the ability to use all these ample skills he has in such a way that can really dictate things. I don't think he has the raw scoring, flame-throwing ability of a Jason Tatum, but he doesn't need that. He doesn't need to be that guy. He can just be really freaking good. I mean, you know, we can get all excited about the 360 dunk, and frankly, why wouldn't we be? But that guy, I have all the respect in the world for that guy, Jaylen Brown. I mean, I have been so impressed with him over the past 12 months, and you know, on the court, off the court, certainly. But you know, I think that there's a piece of this that, you know, Smart has this. They all kind of have their piece of this, which is what I really like about this team. I think there's a leadership role that Jaylen is starting to latch onto. Smart is a guy, I think, who patrols the locker room and who keeps people in check. And I think Tatum is just this raw, unadulterated power offensively that, frankly, is MVP caliber. And we're seeing it now. And oh, my goodness, you get tingles on the back of your neck when you watch the guy play. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's crazy what you see him do with this stuff.
Nobody else gets a shot off with a defender right up on him like that other than Harden. And let's be real, Harden travels every time he goes into a step back, it seems, right? But yeah. Jason's is legitimate. And I'm there's a height difference there too, right? So, but yeah. Even that and a length difference, and so that's a factor. But dude, it's so smooth what Tatum's doing. He's like in the zone, and what's great to see, a lot of guys that have success, especially on offense like Tatum is right now at this age, it comes with a lot of volume shooting.
Yeah.
And some seriously poor nights on percentages. That's not what we're seeing right now. I mean, there's been nights like that for Tatum, but on the whole, he's a very high percentage shooting player. He shot better from three than he did from two this year, and the numbers ridiculously in the 40s. And so this is a guy that is staying in the zone, even with periods of not having to shoot along the way. And that's what's creating this enormous chemistry and allowing other players to take their turn. It's how Brown gets 29 points and it creates space for everybody. And then again, what was so amazing about game two was all the different looks going into a zone. We haven't seen that many adjustments in one game from Brad Stevens, I don't think ever. I think that game showed so many different looks and total faith in the entire team and giving everybody – I mean, they went really deep in the bench, and you can't simply say it's because Hayward was out. There were needs there. There were things that they needed to get done with Grant Williams that it wasn't like Hayward was going to do that. Great adjustments. And, again, those things work, and those bench players are ready to play and have that confidence – because you don't have players on this club that are volume shooters hogging the shots. Kemba doesn't hog it. Jaylen doesn't hog it. Tatum doesn't hog it. Gordon was one of the most unselfish stars on the team. It's the reason guys – it's what it's all about, man. That's basketball.
And, so Donovan Mitchell, future Boston Celtic, and current Utah Jazz – player who is, friends with Tatum, a contemporary, a guy who, that rookie season really starred much more so than Tatum did, was kind of neck and neck with Ben Simmons in a fraudulent Rookie of the Year campaign that Ben Simmons never should have been a part of, because I completely object to the idea that a guy sits out a year and then becomes a rookie. I don't understand how that is when you get NBA training, but I'll put that aside for now. But Donovan Mitchell, who I think is a good player, strong player. I like watching him play,
57. Absolutely could take over a game. Let's put it on that same par. Sure. Absolutely take over a game.
Absolutely. 57 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists in their game one loss to Denver, overtime. Minus 11 in that. 33 shots, 33 field goal attempts for Donovan.
How many for the team? How many for the entire team?
Oh, for the whole team in that one? So the whole team that night had 95. So he had a fifth, a little more than a fifth of all the team's shots.
Not a fifth, a third.
He had 21.
Oh, I thought you said 33. Not made.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. No, I'm sorry. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, 33 attempts out of 95. It's 34, 35% of the shots.
Third of the shots. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you take that, and you know, that's why, you know, going to what you were talking about here, you know, a game like game two, right? Tatum clearly, I mean, incendiary. I mean, the guy, I'm surprised he was able to sit down and didn't melt the Gatorade seats that they have there for the fans or for the folks playing. He had 20 shots, you know, 8 for 12 from 3, right? Plus 29 on the night. Now, look, I mean, he's in a different role, his size. I mean, there's a whole bunch of other stuff. But, like, what would Tatum have done if he had 33 shots in that game? You know? Celtics only had 86 shots.
I got you. But, well, yeah, right, shooting 40%, he would, you know, right. He would have more than 50. Yeah.
Right. If he more than doubled the number of shots he took, right? He had, he only, quote unquote, had 33 points. 33 points after wearing literally Larry Bird shorts walking in. That is, to me, the mark of the man, the mark of Jason Tatum at this point, is that he's talking about the importance of doing that, yes, but making sure I'm doing the defense, making sure, you know, making the right reads, like you were saying. It's making those adjustments in how things, you know, they go zone, they throw a double at him, they blitz him, they, you know, seeing all that and responding. And then, you know, and then not even a part of him, but in terms of the type of player he is, Jaylen Brown's posting stuff on his Instagram like, hey, you know, Tatum is the first rookie, you know, first person under 22 to hit 9 threes in a game. Now, you know what? What does that mean? Maybe it means nothing. But the fact that these guys who somewhat, we talked about this a little bit, I think 2 weeks ago, about, you know, you're young guys and who's going to take the lead. And you don't want to see a Westbrook Durant situation crop up. And you see these guys cheering for each other, rooting each other on, you know. There's room for both of them, and they play defense. They are both – they want to see each other succeed. And as good as he is as an ISO player, there is no, like, sense of this that he's, like, losing shots or, you know, Jalen's upset because of this and that. No one cares. It's about –
it's because they like to play defense. Because they have they're so bought into the whole team concept. It's so clear. And who knows, let's be real, what will happen year after year with changes in roster construction and things will happen. But if those two players, and you know, Marcus Smart is a big part of this too. If those two players, think about them at age 25 and Marcus Smart, what, he won't quite be 30 at that point, right? You're talking 3-4 years from now, and Marcus is 25 now, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yep.
So Marcus is in his late 30s, still durable enough to throw his ass all over the floor like he does. And then these two guys with, I mean, seriously, think about it. Eastern, we got to see what happens when they face Toronto. It's likely going to be Toronto, but we got to see what happens there. But if they got to the Eastern Conference Finals, and then you still got 3 more years, it's not out of the question for them to go at least 2 more times, if not every time. Can you imagine two players at the age of 25 who are the star players on your team having already been to 4 or, you know, let's say 4 Eastern Conference Finals? Not even Clay and Steph did that.
That's right. Absolutely.
That's amazing.
That's the comp now. You know, I used to laugh when you'd say, like, I want it to be like that. And I'd be like, Justin, come on. When does that ever happen? And the odds would say, I'm right and you're wrong. But
I'm a dreamer, baby. I dream a lot of crazy, awesome things that come true.
Yeah. And you can't argue with it because it's there. It's happening. You know, it's hard to not see this and be like, yeah, that's where we're going. That's where we are. Jason Tatum and these Boston Celtics and Jaylen Brown, I mean, they're built like the Golden State Warriors, and Smart is their Draymond, and they're built for this.
And he really is, man. What he's been doing to Embiid. Let's do the ad read. We'll talk about Smart, Kemba, bench, and then we'll hit a little bit on the draft lottery. Maybe just a little bit of a downer for Celtics fans who would have loved to punt that pick just one more time and get a crack at it next year. But live sports are back, and it's very possible that we may see an NBA playoff matchup between the Clippers and the Nuggets, and that's why our partners at Manscaped have partnered with us to make sure your Nuggets to make sure your Nuggets are as safe as possible when that matchup happens. And so, to keep your Nuggets safe, Manscaped is going to provide you the best tools for your grooming experience. And I'll tell you what, it's happened a few times. There is nothing worse than grabbing out that disposable razor that's been sitting in the shower and then, oh, Nick, I need some gel so I'll feel better. The Lawnmower 3.0 is the best hygiene tool for the modern man. Because of their ceramic blade and skid-safe technology, your snags will be reduced. They actually just released their Shears 2.0 nail kit, which is the perfect add-on to their Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer. The Shears 2.0 is a luxury four-piece nail kit featuring tempered stainless steel tools, and it includes slash-tip tweezers. That just sounds dangerous. I'm sorry. Whoa. Slash-tipped tweezers. Like, I'm on a motorcycle right now. Slash-tipped tweezers, rounded point scissors, fingernail clippers, and a medium grit nail file. Their Perfect Package 3.0 comes with the new and improved lawnmower. Waterproof. See, here's what everybody doesn't know, John. We get a free one of these kits. Yeah. And they sent both of them to you this time, so I didn't get mine. I still have my old kit. And this is key right here. This is so key. Their Perfect Package 3.0 comes with the new and improved lawnmower, waterproof. Yeah. So key, dude. I do not have a – you got to ship me my stuff. I'm even doing the ad read. I even threw it to Nick Gelso.
It is lit too. It's got a little light on it too. So, it's pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Waterproof, cordless body trimmer, performance boxer briefs. Yeah. I definitely like the swag, the travel bag. I'm using it right now for you to use when you're done quarantining. I use it anyway. I travel so much. I just keep it in the bag and then I'm ready to go. Grab the bag and go. This is awesome. The perfect package. Grab the bag and go. that was unintentional. The Perfect Package 3.0 also comes with the Crop Preserver and the Crop Reviver. Now, all right. The Crop Preserver, I was going to ask this question because I haven't actually read this read until right now. The Crop Preserver, I knew what this was. This came in the last kit. It's anti-chafing ball deodorant, which ensures that your afternoon stroll doesn't end with your balls sticking to your leg, which it absolutely happens. And in quarantine, everybody's going for that afternoon stroll. Now, this is different. The Crop Reviver is a spray-on toner for your balls, and it's made with soothing aloe and witch hazel extracts that will give your balls a boost, maybe even a jump.
All need a boost, let's be honest, right?
Well, I mean, you and I are in our 40s, right? Or
everything.
Yeah. You absolutely. Just turned 40? Did you just turn 40?
Oh, God. 42.
40. Okay.
Yeah. We've been doing this a long time, Justin.
I'd say I seriously, I was in my 20s when we started this.
I know.
Oh, that's crazy.
It is crazy.
Pretty soon we're gonna be doing our 20th year show. That's insane.
Oh my gosh.
Hey, well, Appling. Papley, we talk about 20 years. You can get 20% off and free shipping using the promo code at manscaped.com. And the promo code is super easy. The code is code. It's capital C-O-D-E code. That easy. Get 20% off. Dude, this is my favorite. Oh, no. New code. Nope. We didn't update our read. That's what happened there. The code. That's an insert. The code. And this is still, again, apropos, talking about almost 20 years, 20% off and free shipping with our code, CSL20, there you go, at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with the free shipping at manscaped.com. Just use promo code CLNS. No, use our code CSL. That stands for Celtic Stuff Live, CSL20, and take your grooming game to the next level. That was one of the more fun ad reads we've ever done on this show. I'm not even going to lie.
And it's a good product. There's a lot of stuff we read. This is one we absolutely can endorse. We both have used it. We both like it. It's worthwhile. It's worthwhile to spend on what you need for this. So definitely go out and get it. Put the code in. Let them know.
Not going to lie, I like it.
Yeah, it's legit.
It was the first ad where we got, like, you know, because a lot of the advertisers on CLNS Media will send you samples. It was the first one when it arrived and I opened it. I was like, okay. And
right.
And then started going through the box and was like, I love this. I yes. love this.
Yes.
Yep. Speaking of things I love. I love Marcus Smart, and there isn't anybody in Boston who doesn't. The dude only brings somewhat infrequent groans from me when he keeps shooting three-pointers. He's got a tendency. He's not going to do it very often. He definitely did it the other night, and yet he does all these other things that you almost forget that you groaned. And it's like, really, you're gonna shoot it again. You're having an off night, Marcus. You're not hitting three. Stop shooting them. And then, you know, a little bit later, he gets one to go. And even ESPN's thinking the same thing, or TNT. I think that was on TNT. And they're like, he finally gets one. Good for him. And I'm like, yeah, I've been thinking that. Like, why do you keep shooting it, dude? But he does so many other things. And his defense on Embiid. And I'm not just talking about what they highlighted from game one, where he would come over and help, because, yeah, the rest of the team definitely learned from that strategy. When Romeo Langford was out there, he looked a lot like Marcus Smart. Like, he was really watching what Smart was doing, and when it was his turn, he kept shading over to Embiid and trying to get that steal and knock it loose. But then there's adjustments. How many times, and we saw this, you know, Brad, like, it's a flop, it's a flop. What's going on with Embiid? It's a flop. How many times did Marcus seriously take a beating? I mean, I know we had the Jalen injury to his thigh, you know, that he kind of overcame, but how many times did Smart just get clocked by Embiid and just take it?
Oh, for real. Yeah. Yeah. There was a number of them. And it almost seems like Smart is hunting those. He's looking for it. Yeah. He knows.
It's in your head. Dude, he's totally getting in their head.
Yeah. You know, although the Sixers are the ones playing like a zombie.
It's like,
ladies and gentlemen, Embiid, we are from the 90s.
We are. I'm about to reference the Rocky movie. You know, like, Embiid is like, I will break you. And then Smart's like, no, I'm Rocky. And how appropriate is that playing against Philly?
If you can change and I can change, then we all can change. Philly's front office is never going to change. And if they're going to try to pin this on Brett Brown, this is bigger than Brett Brown. This is about those two guys. I was listening to Low Post today on the way home, you know, and I keep hearing, you know, like, well, you know, they're. Zach is like, well, you know, if you lose an all NBA third team guy, you're not going to look that good. Zach, you don't get it, man. It's not. I respect a lot of Zach Lowe, and yes, defensively they would look a heck of a lot better with Ben Simmons out there guarding Tatum than whatever the hell they're doing with Matisse Thybulle. But, like, truthfully, this is a problem they are a problem. And it's not going to work with those two guys. It's just not, you know, and maybe there's stuff that they could do around, you know, adding pieces around, but those pieces have to be so important and they have to be the absolute perfect pieces to fit next to those two guys that it's never.
They need to get smaller.
Yes.
What they went the wrong direction. They kept getting bigger. And what they really needed to do was get smaller with higher level talent.
Kemba,
right?
If they had spent that money on Kemba instead of on Horford, they would be in a completely different place right now.
Yep.
Completely different place.
Because there's no reason. Look at what the this is a great example. And Simmons is great with the ball in his hand, and I get all that. But Embiid can shoot from the outside. They have a perfect way to play an inside-out game if they take the ball out of Ben's hands to initiate the offense, right? Because they can invert that, and even though he doesn't shoot from the outside, he can playmake from within the post, shift back out, and they can have Ben leading it on the offense, directing the offense from the outside, and Embiid spacing it, and then a guy like Kemba, you know, who's going to be able to go in and find the soft spots while they pulled everybody out because they're big, is perfectly capable of hitting that shot. Plus, they can still switch back into bully ball, and totally. And that's what they need. They need another ball handler with Simmons, not because Simmons isn't capable, but because Simmons can't shoot from outside. And you have to get him, inside without the ball in his hands to be, I'm not saying he's not effective otherwise, but that's what they needed. They didn't need, you know, they just don't need, they did not need Horford and they didn't need more big men. And, and the game, look at the way the Celtics totally game planned. That's all right. We got a guy who can shoot mid-range, so it's fine. It's fine. You can pack the middle, you know, or you can blitz us on the perimeter, but they finally figured it out. You know, get them in transition because they're big and slow.
Exactly. I love Philly falling apart. I don't love Brett Brown getting the short end of it. He's a main guy. I think he's a good dude. I think he's been in a tough situation. Yes, there were some bad teams and they kind of worked through those things. And so, you know, now they're ready for the next level and maybe he's not ready for that, but this team, the way that the basis of this Sixer team is a faulty foundation. And I don't see that it's going to work no matter what they do.
What sucks is it's killing the rivalry. This was the process versus I'm serious. This is one of the teams.
What are you talking about?
No, think about it. Earlier in the year, before COVID, we were having this conversation. It's like, man, Philly's kind of got their number this year, and we were confident that Boston would be able to take them in the postseason, and that it wasn't fully representative. You know, first game's the first game of the season, and teams still kind of coming together, even though they played USA basketball together, and da 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 da. But this was a rivalry and two different rebuilding styles all together. There's so many storylines here and I'm happy to, hopefully it's a sweep and we just move on, get some rest. Cause we said this was going to be important. And now without Hayward, it's even more important. A sweep would be beautiful. And I think the Celtics are benefiting from no travel, to be honest with you. I think their team chemistry is giving them an advantage in the bubble. There's no doubt in my mind, and they can really get into that groove and all of that. But I do feel like we're being robbed a little bit of the rivalry between these two teams. And I'm not saying I want Philly to come back, you know, I don't know, man. I went to a playoff game the year we beat them 4-1. And it was the only game they lost, and there were tons of Celtics fans packed in Philly. So I just think this could have been – it's been a rivalry, but I was just thinking it could have been a lot of fun. And we'll see what happens. Definitely. If they fire Brown, I think they're heading the wrong direction.
I think that's absolutely what's going to happen. And, you know, until they – I think, honestly, until they figure out they got to trade one of those guys – I think they're just going to be, you know, kind of spinning the wheels, truthfully. I think the guy to trade is probably Simmons, but, you know, I don't know how you play the way that they want to play with those two guys. I just don't see how it works in today's league. 1985, oh my God, you're probably the best team in the league. You know, better than, maybe even better than LA, you know, but like in this league right now, I don't see it, you know. So, yeah. You know, look, I mean, I think, I don't want to get too far ahead of us, but we should talk, like you said, we should talk about like kind of where this is headed. I think the series is over. I mean, don't you? I mean, this is, there's no way Philly's coming back. And I don't think they win another game.
They really looked broken and ready to give in by the end of game two. It didn't, and I don't want to make more than it is in one game, you know, the faces, you know, and the expressions. But I honestly, that's part of the reason I'm throwing Brad so much credit for the game planning. I think Philly realized they're like, dude, they can throw so much shit at us right now. They can throw so much at us, and they've got something for anything. Like the beginning of both games, they went to Embiid and bang, bang, bang. But I also think Embiid's getting tired, and I'm not, which is amazing to say because he's so big. I noticed it even more in this series than in the past, and he's not any bigger than he's been, but I really saw it this series, and maybe it's because Smart's banging on him so much, I just realized just how muscular and athletic and fluid he is for his size. He's gigantic, but he just, you know, it's a great example. You can't do it all. I'm not saying that Philly isn't going to try to steal one, that they're not. I'm not saying that they don't have the fight in them. I just think the Celtics got their number and they know it. I think psychologically they've already been put in the sleeper hold.
Yeah, I think so. I think you saw that with Embiid, you know, the video of him sitting on the bench at the end there. He's a beaten guy, you know. Honestly, I mean, I think he's going to play on Friday. But if they lose, they go on 3-0, they're going to shut him down. I don't think he plays game four. I think he's done for the series. You know, I think
if they steal one, it could be that game just because it changes everything.
Yeah, you mean game three? You think they could steal game
three?
No.
If they go to game four and they sit Embiid,
that's one
that the team could actually, that could give them a spark to try to fight, you know, and there'd be enough of an adjustment in game plan that the Celtics could get caught off guard thinking they were going to get an easy win, and then they, you know, take a little punch in the mouth and going to play one more.
Sure, yeah. I think it's going to be a sweep at this point. I see a Celtics team that's so locked in, so focused, so together as a unit. You know, Philly's made some shots and it hasn't mattered. The Celtics have just been that much better. And so, you know, to me, that seems like they're just not going to get beyond that. You know, it's just not going to go, you know, further, but like, if the Celtics, you know, like I said, they pull up Friday, I think it's over, and we're talking about Toronto because Toronto's not going to lose another game to the Nets. Do you think? I mean, it seems to me like that's also a sweep as well. And the NBA is not waiting for all of the series to end for the next one start. So if for some reason, you know, let's say, you know, either the Miami Indiana series is held up or what have you, the Celtics Raptors series would go ahead. So that could be rather interesting. You know, if there is any hold up, whoever the winner is of that could have some rest, as long as that's not as long of a series. So, you know, just looking way ahead at this point, you know, there's a way for the winner of the Celtics Raptors series to have a little bit of a lead, but I think that's going to be a slugfest. You know, I think we haven't talked much about Hayward, you know, his absence, and I don't think he's that big of an issue in this series. I think he's a big
definitely issue in Toronto,
in the Toronto series, because that switchability that Toronto has is key, you know, and you're going to have to rely a lot more on guys, to me, more Romeo Langford, less.
I was just going to say Langford. So yeah, with you on that.
I think but
honestly, other than not getting the calls because he's a rookie and it's going to limit his minutes, even if he does a great job, He's going to get that treatment. And I think we did see it actually the other night, you know, things that they weren't calling on Smart, they called on Langford. There's a degree of physicality that they'll let players get away with, and the rookies don't get it. They just don't. And so Langford's going to struggle for that reason, but he's going to have some strong minutes. How about the three-pointer that he hit? And you're talking about that, you know, that when the bench came in and gave him a lift, that three-pointer that he hit was so needed at that time. And he was playing great defense, especially considering, you know, how much experience he's had and never in an NBA postseason. So I like Langford a lot. He's far more promising. And I remember it was just like, questions around his outside shot, and then they give him the paddle and like, oh, great, he's a work in progress. It's going to be a while. But he really gets the culture. My commitment to defense gets me on the floor. But then he's got a lot more offensive, just natural talent that's there. And he's got loads of confidence, which really helps a rookie. And I'm not saying these guys don't come into the NBA with confidence, but he has never, not once, had the look on his face like he didn't know what he was supposed to do. Like intellectually, he's there. He never looked like he didn't know what he was supposed to do, and he never looked like he didn't think he could do what was being asked of him. And sometimes when rookies come in and they start to see the speed of the game and the true size of some of these big men like Embiid, it does alter them. You know, they don't get aggressive because they think their shot could get altered, and they're worried about losing minutes for making the wrong play and overthinking their skill. I just never really seen that from him. Can you remember a time this season, and I know he didn't get a ton of minutes, but can you remember a time when he was on the floor where you thought he's playing outside of himself?
No, I think what I've seen perhaps is he looked tentative at times, but I never saw him like outsized, you know? I mean, I think that's with Carson, for example. I think Carson forces it sometimes, right, more so. I feel like there's a with Romeo, there's a vibe. I don't know if he feels the game, right. and it kind of he reads it, he sees it, he, you know, whatever that is, he's got that in him, and he's into that flow. I mean, and Smart's kind of like that too. I think is that it just it. He can see things. Smart sees things and like creates havoc. Romeo sees things and kind of flows with it a little bit. Right. And I don't know how to describe that better, but I think
you did a good job. Right? Yeah, I do. Yeah. I think you did a really good job. I definitely understand. You know, it's sort of the smoothness versus the chaos that is Marcus Smart. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking like what I've seen Romeo do is explore if it's a possibility, but not lose control. And that's where I think the Carson Edwards comparison helped out a ton. Carson will explore, but then lose control. And that was my point about, I never really felt like Romeo played outside of himself, like beyond his capabilities. Yep. And there's nothing wrong in an NBA offense with exploring whether or not you can get away with something, or how far can I get inside of the paint? What can I create? Okay, there's nothing here, and I'm gonna dribble it back out to the top of the key. Those are the kinds of things that Langford does. And I think that sort of still gets the defense thinking a little bit, like, next time if he catches me sleeping, he's probably gonna go for it. And yet he doesn't get baited very easily. So I think that's the part where you're saying he sees the game, or he sees the floor, you know, really well versus maybe some of the other players. I think everything about Jaylen Brown heading into the draft was how heady he was. We didn't really see anything about that with Langford, but I got a real strong hunch that Langford's a very intelligent basketball mind. And I know we don't always focus on that a lot. What's exciting is the jumping and the athleticism, and Langford's athletic, make no mistake. May not be superior the way that Jaylen Brown is, but yeah. I think he's a very strong basketball mind, and I can't wait for his sophomore season. I think he could end up playing a decent amount of minutes, and it could be for the rest of the playoffs, because you're right. Nobody else gives them that ability that Gordon Hayward did in such an effective fashion with a commitment to D.
I don't think – there's been a lot of slander, I think, thrown Romeo's way over the last – month, let's say, as people were kind of saying, well, what are the Celtics going to look like? And they're getting nothing from their bench. And, you know, Bill Simmons, you know, on ad nauseum. Also, I enjoyed the heck out of Bill Simmons calling Javonte Green, Jamichael Green. That's one of his favorite players, and doesn't understand why Jamichael Green isn't getting more time. But, you know, that's the Boston sports guy. But your point, I think,
is... Who blocked you on Twitter in case you're new to the show?
Yeah. Follow me on Twitter if you want to get more Bill Simmons dislike. But he... The thing about Romeo is that he has that... He like you said, he has that read of the game. He isn't disruptive to it. There are times you wish you got more, perhaps, and there was more offensive explosion or whatever that may be, or how that may manifest. But honestly, that's not – none of that is – to me, when he's on the floor, they have dynamic scorers. They don't need more players who are dynamic scorers. They need players who can hit open shots and maybe create – you know, and take a bad closeout by a defender and finish at the rim. He can do that, you know, and he can then read the defense and find the open guy as well as a rookie possibly could. So to me, like for what he has to be as, you know, a fifth guy, a fifth offensive option when he's on the floor, fourth offensive option on the floor, he's more than adequate for that. He has the size. He has the great defensive instincts. You know, I mean, is he like, you know, a plus-plus guy who plays against Pat Connaughton, you know, if they get to a Philly series? Or, you know, is Norm Powell going to abuse him? I don't think so. I mean, I think Norm's a good player, but I don't think he's going to get abused. So, you know, I guess my point is like, you know, he doesn't tip the balance away from Boston when he's on the floor. So why wouldn't you play him more? Why, if that's the type of player you need, that's the player who should be on the floor. And, you know,
he mimics what Hayward
him too.
would do, you know, just doesn't quite have the ability just not at the same level. It's just not at the same level, but he fits into the flow of the offense in a fairly similar way. It's just such a bummer for Hayward because he was getting so aggressive. And I think on the last show, I pointed that out. I just loved the way that Hayward was taking it to the hole and his hops. And I'm glad it's not the ankle, you know, the ankle, but still, 4 weeks is a long time. That takes us at least to the Eastern Conference Finals. And, you know, the truth is we got to be prepared for him just not really being ready unless he gets super ahead of schedule and starts feeling better. But it's going to take some time, even when that's healed and it feels better, for him to get confident again. You know, you could make a showing in the finals, but we got to be thinking about this roster without Hayward. And I'll add one other thing, because we're pretty much tight on time and we're going to have to wrap it, and we haven't covered the lottery. But when we look at that bench, so encouraging against such a big team like Philly to watch Cantor really be able to give some good, strong minutes. Great to see Grant Williams, who hit a three-pointer in game two. Mm-hmm. That was really huge. Critical as well. And I'll go back more to game one, obviously, for Rob Williams. But again, he took a three-pointer in game two as well. Not a good one. But but Rob, you know, you can just see the energy. He when you look at the smaller teams like Toronto, I think we get more Rob than Cantor. But it's so awesome the way that they have Tice is just the great screener, fight for some rebounds, hits a three-pointer here and there, enough to make it dangerous when he goes out, you know, enough to space it, maybe get some respect. You know, he's definitely the starter. But then they've got all these different looks that they can roll out there depending on the circumstances. And I just think great roster construction.
Yeah, especially when Rob Williams hits, when Grant Williams hits, you're starting to see, I think, in Rob, this is second year Terry Rozier stuff. Terry Rozier didn't play great through his first year, got to the end, showed a little bit. Second year, not a great year, started to star as a second year player, and then it built. And I think you're going to see the same thing with Rob. He's now going to be a rotation player for the Celtics moving forward. And, you know, I think Grant Williams is doing that same thing. It takes a long time. And the other thing to remember, the Celtics pick young players over old players. Matisse Thybulle is 3 years older than Grant Williams. You know, so these are not players that you should hold on the same you know, spectrum. It's a completely different. Yes, they're in the same.
Yeah, we've had this conversation.
But absolutely. It takes a while for those guys to get to the place they are, and I'm quite confident. You know, for a Rob, for a Romeo, for a Grant Williams, I like the fact that we have younger players who have a higher ceiling. You know, would I like to have a bench with a few more veteran players? Yes, but by and large, this puts you in a better position to have a higher ceiling to make a larger impact down the road. And so you're totally right about that. I'm just, the future of this team is so bright. And I hate to lose Hayward, but there's opportunities here for players, and it'll be a different series against Toronto. And yes, I'm going to speak with certainty about that. You know, it's going to be much more focused on smaller players, wing players, switching. You know, Romeo is going to be a big battle in that. You know, Wanamaker is going to have. You know, we may even see, you know, Tremont Waters to try to find a water bug to stay in front of Fred VanVleet. Those guys are going to be a problem in this series, and we're going to have.
I will say though, you bring up Wanamaker again, looking really steady. And that's what you need from a guard off the bench in the postseason. Just a steady Eddie. I love him. All right, let's cover the draft lottery, mostly just from the Celtics perspective. Everybody else is going to talk ad nauseum about the other teams and you know, basically the Golden State Warriors are likely shopping that pick. And it makes sense. Maybe it'll help them get somebody to get that team back to the same level as if they had KD, or maybe not quite, but, you know, give them a good, strong force there. And maybe they'll make the pick, but this doesn't seem like the draft. If it was next year's draft, you know, or last year's draft, they might have made that pick. But I think they want to be a lot more competitive today. So maybe it's being shopped. Celtics, on the other hand, it's interesting that we had all of these picks to play with that all could have been potential lottery picks. And, you know, I'm thinking about the Sacramento pick and now the Memphis. And they really, I mean, they didn't turn out, like, the players we got didn't necessarily turn out to be bad. But the draft position was meh. And this Memphis pick was something that we had really high hopes for. And it's meh. I mean, in a meh draft, they've got 14. Will they add depth? Sure. These are all picks we thought they would package and trade maybe. And they've got, and you and I have talked about this, they've got so many young players, you know, and that draft slot, you know, is pretty much in the Romeo Langford land for the most part. You know, are they really going to get an impact kind of player? And even if they did, do they really have any room on this roster anymore for any more young players? I'm not sure that I don't think they can trade this pick, and I'm not sure how much they're going to be able to do with it either, to be honest with you.
Well, I think they are overloaded. They're going to need to make trades. You know, we really don't want to see situations where players are cut and an opportunity to try to you know, create roster spots. I mean, you've got three number one picks, you've got a second round pick, you've got a full roster, you've got, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with Gordon Hayward, but I would assume he's going to opt into that last year of his contract. I mean, really the Celtics, just in terms of roster spots, you would think they'd need to trade some people. I mean, Tremont Waters, you've got him coming off his two-way deal, same with Taco. I mean, you feel like they've got to consolidate some players here at some point. And, you know, this is kind of a draft where maybe you can do that. The problem is there's, you know, there isn't really any, like, kind of star guy that you're going to go up and get at, like, 7 or 8 in this draft. It's not a deep draft. It's not a great draft. So you really don't want to spend a lot of draft capital in a draft that's maybe weaker. on the whole. But, you know, look, I mean, I'm going to trust Danny Ainge. I know people get on, you know, well, you know, what about this guy? What about Fab Mello? What about, you know, Yabu? But, like, honestly, like, come on. Are there people who've maybe had statistically better opportunities in drafting? Maybe. There aren't many, though. There aren't many guys who've done better in the draft than Danny Ainge has. And, you know, I do think that Grant
Williams just love to see him spin it off. I'd love to see him spin these picks out for future first rounds, because you know what happens once they become a player. If you're going to spin them off, they become a second round pick. If we could turn these, even if they're protected future first, if we can just kick the can down the road. I mean, even last year, I thought we'd kick the can down the road, and we made all the picks, didn't we?
We did that weird thing. We took one and we kicked it, and then we used it to get, you know, basically to get off of, you know, Bane's contract, so that way we could, you know, so it was that whole, you know, that whole kind of shuffle. You know, and the Tybalt deal. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, I think that's that an ideal world. You try to kick some of this down to, you know, down the road to next year, at least one or two of them. You're going to have more people who will be up next year. Hayward will be up, you know, Tice and others, and Kantor.
So, I mean, multiple first-round picks to – I mean, they're going to keep paying people, right? And so it's these rookie deals that keep all of that in check so that you're fiscally sound. And so having three picks in a year where you've already got your top, you know, six players on the roster pretty well established is the way you want it to be. And you know, that I mean, you've got Smart, Brown, – Hayward, Kemba's here for a while, right? Even if Smart, Tatum, Brown, Kemba, even if Hayward doesn't stick around, you've got Rob Williams. He's going to be around. You got Romeo. I mean, I'm already at the six players, you know, that you know aren't going to go anywhere, most likely. I don't even know that I said Grant Williams, but I think, you know, he's just going to be one of those perpetual rotation players. He might not stick around at the end of his rookie deal. He's one of those guys that kind of fringes it at that point. You know, Tice seems like he could be an affordable keeper for another contract.
He's a non-guaranteed guy, and Kander's got a player option for next year. It would seem like he would.
And he already took it on the cheap.
Right.
So why not to keep playing for a, you know, Eastern Conference Finals, potential finals team, right? That's only getting better.
Unless Kantor really goes crazy, you know, you got to think he's going to opt in. So, I mean, I think you're generally going to have the same veterans around next year. I think they're going to keep Wanamaker around at $1.8 million, you know, but to me, you know, you've got a number of these players, you know, Poirier, that would be a guy I would try to maybe move, because that's just not a lot of money that you're going to want to keep on the books for the coming year. But yeah, I mean, consolidating. I mean, I would love to turn some of these contracts and some of this draft capital into a veteran player. You know, the problem is they're already at $119 million for this year. You know, they're projected, if Hayward opts in, to for $144 million next year. And that's and of course, that doesn't even count Tatum getting maxed out the following year. So, you know, there's obviously concern about cap space as well that they got to keep an eye on.
That's why I'm saying move the picks down the road. You know, maybe you make one of the first round picks or some second round. You know, you just got to work with what you got and try to leave those picks at your future disposal to keep dollars down and keep growing and replacing veterans, except we're not going to be able to replace all the veterans that will ultimately leave this team. And the core will get better, but the veterans won't be able to be replaced. It'll have to be more rookies.
This is why we listened to Eric Weiss 15 years ago when we first got to know him.
Dude, he nailed it.
Because
this was his theme.
Absolutely. And he was right as rain about it. You know, the only problem with Celtics having gone so heavy in that direction is I don't think there's enough veterans around that you can rely upon who've been there, done that. You know, I don't think, you know, you know, that 08 Celtics club, for example, was veteran heavy, but the young players had their
what
place.
What is going on this in your team. Background?
Oh,
which kid has raided your yeah.
Yeah, my oldest Will is making popcorn, and so it's
so hold on a second. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
Will commandeered the office to play Fortnite.
I'm down. No, that was Carter.
Carter's in the office. Okay,
yeah, I'm downstairs, and my son is making popcorn. So yeah, that's a little
air pop or microwave
inside baseball. Microwave. So pretty soon you're gonna hear the beep beep. Oh, you already popped it. Oh, there you go. Very nice.
Oh, great.
Very nice.
Great.
Yeah, big fans of the microwave popcorn. We're all gonna have that.
All right.
Popcorn lung. Anyway,
we hit an hour. I'm wrapping this.
Good idea.
I can't believe we did an hour. This is what happens when you don't talk about basketball for so many months.
We did have a 20-minute Manscaped ad, too, though. So, to be fair.
We did have a 20-minute Manscaped ad.
Okay. It was 50.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can subscribe to Celtic Stuff Live on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. We'd love it if you gave us a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And I guess that's it. On behalf of John and myself, thank you for listening to this week's episode of Celtics Stuff Live.